from tops to wear a day coat, pants with stripes and cut away coat, perfect fits, putting on the Ritz.
Well, let me tell you this joke. Ready? So I went into the kitchen cabinet earlier today, and I got some Wheat Thins, and I just wasn't feeling it. And then I got some Triscuits, and I wasn't feeling it. So I grabbed another box. It was a red box, and I put it on the Ritz.
Can I ask?
Oh, it was a good one. Let's go. That was
a
good.
Can I ask you a serious question? How can you reach? But how can you reach for Triscuits and not be satisfied?
I hate Triscuits so much. Oh no, Triscuits are
God's gift to
Wheat Thins are
crackers.
Wheat Thins are. How dare you?
Fuck Triscuits.
Oh, I love a Wheat Thin.
Those are like some like your old grandfather that comes out and gives you some Triscuits. I'm talking about Wheat Thins are the best.
Wheat Thins are the best.
Well, no, Wheat Thins have that. Wheat Thins get that odd, that pointy corner that sometimes gets you. You know what I'm talking about? That fucking pointy corner that just
like that dangerous Captain Crunch berries.
It fucks up. That scours the top of your mouth.
Well, nobody said it was a safe snack.
Our childhood. Welcome to the second of four very special Halloween episodes here on Three and a Half Gentlemen, the podcast, where three of the four hosts provide a refined and intellectual analysis of movies from our private collections, and one of us tries desperately to keep up. We'll let you decide which host is which, but for now, my name is Sean, and with me, as always, are my co-hosts, Jeremiah.
What up, yo?
Eddie.
It's pronounced Frankenstein.
And Brandon.
That's what I'm hitting you with. I don't care how many times we do this. It's going to be that.
I like it. I like it. Oh, my God. I like it a lot. With season four, we're picking movies that we think will be fun to talk about. Some of these will be from our private collections, while others will be from our new releases in theaters.
As with every review we give, our goal is to answer one simple question. How many drinks does it take to get through the film that we just watched? Now, at the end of the podcast, we'll rate the movie based on a scale of 0 to 5, 0 being a perfect film that you can watch stone cold sober, and 5 being sort of the film that makes you feel like you're running away from reanimated corpse.
With that, what movie do we have putting on the Ritz for us tonight, gentlemen?
Well, tonight we have the 1974 Mel Brooks-directed parody, Young Frankenstein. This cult classic tells the story of Dr. Frederick Frankenstein, or Friedrich Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
Or Froddy Frankie. I don't know. Grandson of Victor Frankenstein and Freddy's attempts to live up to his family name after he brings the dead to life. Young Frankenstein brings together a full roster of comedy names, including Gene Wilder, Madeline Kahn, Terry Garr, Peter Boyle, and Marty Feldman. The movie has earned an IMDb rating of 8.0 out of 10 and has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 94% with the critics, and an audience score of 92%. And yes, I know, Sean. I know.
Perfect scores.
Wow.
As with every movie that we review.
Like 90% higher than I should be.
Yeah. As with every movie that we review, we try to pair our selection with a cocktail that we hope will enhance the viewing experience. And I have to tell you, after saying cocktail for weeks and weeks and weeks, I noticed
it has been
changed it in the script. I really appreciate
it. Listen, I hear your plea.
So, Ed, why don't you take us through the drink that we will be enjoying this evening?
Yes. Tonight, we're drinking the Ritz cocktail. To make this drink, 3/4 ounce of Cognac brandy. Or you could just say brandy. Half ounce the triple cognac? Set. That's right. Half ounce triple set. A 1/4 ounce maraschino liqueur. 1/4 ounce lemon juice into a mixer with ice. Strain it into a coupe glass and then top it off with 1.5 ounces of Brut champagne.
All right, let's get going. Let's get going with Young Frankenstein, which if you look at the pantheon of Mel Brooks movies, I would say is the least cancelable today. When you look at something like Blazing Saddles. Spaceballs, I would put on par with
Listen,
this.
I'm a huge fan of Robin Hood Men in Tights. Like, to me, that is comic gold.
Yes.
That one is where it's at, and then you haven't
watched that movie in a while. Clearly,
I have. Dave Chappelle, I love it. It's great.
So I watch this almost every year, and for me, this is like Mel Brooks' masterpiece. If you look at really closely, he unearthed the original Frankenstein sets from Universal. He used the same materials that they used. He, you know, it's just. The story is virtually, you know, it's just new and fresh and different on the same theme. And in my opinion, I think Mel Brooks is
All I'm saying is you can use the same spatula that Wolfgang Puck used and still make a shitty burger. That's all I'm saying.
Jeremiah. Nah.
I like that one, friend.
Sometimes you can actually get a nice taste from that, you know, from that spatula, actually. So I'm just going to say, you know, 1974 was a fucking banner year for Mel Brooks because you know what movie came out too, as well as Young Frankenstein?
Blazing Saddles.
Blazing Saddles.
Yeah, a good movie.
Two of those movies, classic movies, the same year. That's pretty fucking remarkable, man.
I like Gene Wilder.
Gene Wilder had a year.
Gene Wilder is fucking great in this. You guys can talk shit all you guys want. He is fucking so hardcore in this movie. No.
So this is my first time watching this movie. And
really?
Yes. Yes. I've never watched this.
You never watch it with me?
Never watch it with you.
Dude, I watch this movie all the time.
We've watched Blazing Saddles, Spaceballs, Robin Hood, Men in Tights. We watch a lot of those ones. This one, I don't think, never caught my eye at the time because it was black and white. And I think I was too young at the time. And I was going in, I said earlier, like, I want to like this movie because it's of the history of it. And so I really tried hard. I don't know if it affected anything because I tried too hard. but overall, I mean, like, I like the cast. The cast was a solid cast. That's a positive, I think, personally.
Well, let's get into some scenes because I think one of the brilliant parts about this movie is how Gene Wilder portrays a character who does not want to be associated with his past. Mm-hmm. And so he's got a family member, Victor Frankenstein, who basically was, you know, accused of reanimating the dead and stealing from graves and all of that. And in that classroom scene, the first classroom scene, he's so pompous and so Gene Wilder. It just makes me fall in love with his character. And I've seen interviews with him talking about this movie, and this was his favorite movie that he ever did. I think it's Mel Brooks' favorite movie as well, that they ever did together. And you have to admit, when he's got that guy and he's talking about autonomic reflexes versus voluntary versus involuntary reflexes.
Raise your right
knee. And he goes, give him another dollar. He's just such an asshole.
But the second time, he hit him in the gut, right? Or in the nuts or something. Because
he hit him in the nuts.
After
actually,
he took off the machine off his head, the guy all of a sudden is like, oh my God, oh my God. That was...
You slimy son of a bitch! And he has a right little. And that stupid, like, I mean, just setting up the Frankenstein, which I think is one of the funniest reoccurring jokes. We did Clue a couple of weeks ago. We talked about the dog poop joke, right? How it just kept going and going and going.
Same thing,
well,
right?
Mispronunciation of names just continued on in this fucking movie until the very end when he declared himself Dr. Frankenstein. But it's just like, I mean, to me, that's just brilliant where it just shows this level of, I don't know. I got a lot of subtext from this movie. I got a lot of undercurrent of trying to make fun of something by just distancing from it. I don't know.
I know. I think it's funny too that they keep going it throughout the film, like you're saying, because Igor comes into the picture, and the first thing he says, like, "You're putting me on," you know. He's like, "No, it's always been pronouncing that," you know. And then Frankenstein goes, "You must be Igor." "No, it's pronounced Igor." Now he fucking switches it. But I read something about, like, Wilder, like, he wanted to do the movie, but he only had one request for the director, Mel Brooks, and that was Mel Brooks not being in this movie, because he said that every time that Mel Brooks is in one of his movies, he's always breaking the fourth wall, and he wanted it just to be just kind of like, not that, not like, you know, oh, here's Mel Brooks, you know, looking at the camera, like winking at it and shit like that. So that was his one request for him to be in this
movie.
Which
is weird because Marty Feldman breaks that fourth wall, really, I think, pretty consistently. But no, it's weird because you're talking about...
He does, but he's not Mel Brooks.
He's not Mel Brooks. No, I think it's interesting because I was doing my dig into Mel Brooks when I was watching this because I needed something to keep my interest. And, you know, it's weird that he hasn't directed anything since 1995. And I was noticing that same thing, that it was the first movie that I can think of, the only movie that I can think of that Mel Brooks doesn't have a cameo in, at least. But he hasn't directed, Sean, since Dracula, Dead and Loving It.
He hasn't directed film.
No. He hasn't directed film. But what I'm saying is, so for a guy who...
He went to Broadway because he did The Producers.
Right, but for a guy who did quite a bit of movies in a 20-year period... to just drop off. It was interesting, is all I'm saying. And I think,
well, and part of it is his, part of it is his shtick, right? It ended. Part of what it is that type of movie. Like, I'm watching this movie. This movie could never get made today. It's clever. It's the language is back and forth. They make fun of everyone.
Listen, all I'm saying is that I'm watching this, and I think that Mel Brooks does a fantastic job of doing Mel Brooks, right? Taking something and parodying it to the point where it is almost just a complete skewering of it, where you don't really remember which is the original and which is the parody. I think that he does this brilliantly. I think that this is a perfect example of a SNL-like sketch that just goes on way, way, way too long. But I think that what it's done is it's done it really, really well. That being said, I literally had to will myself to continue watching. And this is probably the sixth, seventh time I've tried, well, not tried, that I've sat down and watched this movie in my life. And I'm sitting there, and Eddie kind of said it. I wanted to like it. I wanted to know, because, listen, it's a cult classic. I have so many friends, so many people I know that live and die from this movie. And there's plenty of memorable quotes in this movie, sure. But holy fuck, this is not an enjoyable movie. I'm not going to say it's not a good movie. It is not enjoyable. It is, to me, not funny. I swear, I smiled, didn't laugh, but I smiled maybe two times in the entirety of this movie.
So I was going to say the same thing. I mean, I smiled probably more than a couple times, but like I knew what the jokes were, but it was like a sketch or something that I feel like it was, I knew the jokes were coming. Mm-hmm. And I thought at times, I mean, the movie is made very well, you know, and Gene Wilder, you know, is Gene Wilder. And I just saw, like, okay, I could see that the joke is kind of funny, and then it just kind of kept going at times, and then now some of the jokes just didn't hit for me, and then I saw myself smiling more than laughing, if that made sense.
Yeah.
And that's how I took it as. Yeah. Like, I liked the movie, but overall, I feel like there's a lot of hype in this movie, so it's just like, okay, well, I liked it, but I thought I was expecting more a little bit.
I feel like the world has kind of become so complacent with, like, the Step Brothers and the Talladega Nights and the stupid, simple humor that they've kind of lost.
You just call me stupid, huh?
I don't think that you can say that about everybody.
Did not call you stupid at all.
Very close.
I'm saying that, no, not very close. Not at all. I said complacent is the word I used.
Yeah, you didn't say you're stupid.
Like, no, with movies like Step Brothers and Talladega Nights, which are funny in and of themselves. But, I mean, it just, to me, the subtle humor of how serious Gene Wilder takes himself as Frankenstein, as playing this character. I mean, that to me, that subtlety and that the building on a joke, it reminds me of something like something more sophisticated, I guess, like Arrested Development. And I think maybe it doesn't land, but I mean, it's got a 94 audience, 92 or 92 audience, 94 critics. There's just something that's landing here that's not getting through.
I think this is one of the best parody fucking movies out there today, because it's like literally making fun of every 30s horror movies when you think about it. It's like playing a joke at it, you know, how ridiculous it is and everything. So it's like really matching it. But it's also paying so much respect to those 30 horror movies, because it could have been shot in color. It went to Columbia, you know, to get, you know, produced and pictured out and everything like that. But, you know, they wanted to do it like, you know, not black and white. So Brooks was like, fuck you, I'll go to Fox Studios. And they made it black and white. And it serves so fuck well to do black and white in this, you know. Yeah. But Wilder, man, he's a maniac. He's a madman in this film. And it's just funny as shit just to watch him just go madness in this film. You know, when he goes and he's trying to resurrect, you know, or trying to bring back the monster come to life, his eyes are coming out of the fucking screen. It makes me laugh so much.
I mean, the moving hump of Igor, or when he says, I'm a very skilled surgeon, you know, very skilled surgeon. I can take care of that hump. Take care of what? Like, he doesn't even admit the fact that he's got that hump. I mean, Cloris Leachman was fucking, and I mean, we haven't even talked about the score, this beautiful violin score. This luring of the monster is one of the most, it's so 1930s, it's so like old castle. It just brings you right back to the greatness that is like the old Frankenstein movie. And she's just fucking, I mean, Cloris Leachman to me is.
I like the fact that she's just like, you want some warm milk? Yeah. Retire
with the brandy.
Like, no, Ovaltine. He's like, nothing.
Do you notice that her mole moves too?
Eddie, I'm so happy that they enjoyed this movie, man. Throughout the I'm smiling for you guys.
You guys like them. You guys like you guys like Minotites. The mole came from.
Oh
yeah.
Oh no. I mean, cool.
Like, I like Blazing Saddles.
Yep.
You know, Spaceballs. Yep.
I guess my problem is you guys haven't really talked about why you don't like it.
Okay, that's fine. I'm going to go ahead and
tell you a cogent argument as to why. Oh, it's black and white.
It's uneven with its jokes.
It's uneven with its jokes, and I'm going to tell you right now the pacing.
What does that mean?
But the pacing of this movie, I thought, was extremely poorly done, man. Oh my God, it's almost like an Eddie. I'm going to talk to you because I think that you're the only one that might hear me rationally. Is they say a joke and then they give like this beat.
Bro, no, you got a 94% critic score. You're not rational.
God, Sean, this is Jeremiah, you got to back me up when I say this. When Sean doesn't like something, it doesn't matter what the percentage is, right? Doesn't matter what Rotten Tomatoes says. If Sean doesn't like something, everybody else is wrong.
I agree. I'm giving my simple thought and my approach
to hating this movie so much. It's like when they say a joke, whether it's a funny joke or not, they wait for like audience laughter. Did you notice that? And it's like, okay, well, no. Keep going with it. Let us laugh. That's fine. But they have it's so slowly paced. And trust me, I love me some slow movies, but not when it's so disrupted. And Eddie, I think that you're hitting perfectly is that the jokes are just imbalanced. Like I get it. Some of the jokes could be funny. Maybe.
What does that mean? Imbalance? What does that mean?
I don't know. Eddie, I'm going to say my thought on that and then just say, to me, they were trying so hard for kind of a cheap laugh that it just it looked like they were trying too hard, right? Instead of just sitting back and saying, you know, we're just going to – and that's what I love about Mel Brooks. And I think that we have Mel Brooks to thank for all of the absurd humor, right? Everything from Airplane to Hot Shots to even like the Scary Movie type of comedies, whether you like them or not. What I love about Mel Brooks movies is that he doesn't restrain himself at all. He throws everything at the screen. And if it's funny or if it's not funny, it doesn't matter because you're going to get another joke that maybe you're going to laugh at in the next second. With this one, it's like they're pulling back that idea of just throwing it all up on the screen and they're trying to like throw darts at it and try to make the perfect joke and make us say, oh, this is great. And then kind of in a meta fictional meta way, kind of wink at us and be like, haha, look at that. Wasn't that funny? That was so funny. You should laugh. And it just, to me, it seemed pandering. It really did. And this is coming from somebody who does love Mel Brooks and who does love sophisticated humor and doesn't think that this is sophisticated humor. To me, this had the same feel of like a poorly produced college TV station. Like that's how I feel about this one. And I get that it's a genius movie in a lot of people's eyes. To me, there's nothing good about this movie. This is to me one of the worst movies that we have reviewed. And I'm going to get off my high horse and I'm going to go ahead and let Terry Garr. I did like Terry Garr. We got to say some praise about Terry Garr.
God, I mean, yes. Gene Wilder. Yeah, okay. I'm not going to defend.
Go for it, Eddie.
I mean,
I want to hear Eddie.
Dealing with the scores of you keep throwing out the 94%, 8 out of 10. Look at how many votes.
Yeah,
it's not a lot of votes. Not compared to the movies nowadays. People aren't voting for this movie, so it's staying up there.
Hey, this movie got more votes than Knight's Tale, I'll tell you that much.
Okay, I made a mistake.
You throw out, like, let's say, Step Brothers. You just throw out, like, Step Brothers recently. And Step Brothers been out there, you know, has tripled the votes for IMDb, but it's a 6.9 out of 10. It's 164,000, let's just say, for votes for Young Frankenstein.
Terrible movie.
I'm just saying, there's more votes for that movie.
Less people are watching.
Yes. So it's staying up there because of the name.
I'm just trying to figure this one out because, you know, you're talking about this. The movie that you're describing is like every Mel Brooks movie. So I'm pretty sure that if you watch these old Mel Brooks movies.
Oh, my God, Jer. No, look at it. Look at it.
No.
Jeremiah, what I'm saying is if you look at a Mel Brooks movie, it's nonstop action to the point where you're getting whiplash, right? This movie was absolutely not that. You have to admit that. Think of Blazing Saddles. In Blazing Saddles, you take any 3 minutes of film, and you've probably got 60 jokes in that 3 minutes.
I literally remember Blazing Saddles, and I remember the scene where everyone was farting for 5 minutes and around the campfire. So if you think that's funnier, then I
don't absolutely
know
hate that scene. That's the only part of Blazing Saddles. That and when they break the fourth wall into the actual stage. That one pissed
maybe,
me off.
For, I think with Sean, maybe for me, I don't know. Like, I think he's known to like make fun of movies, right? Mel Brooks, mm-hmm. I guess you can say. And I don't know. I just felt like there wasn't Young Frankenstein. Maybe because it holds up as a funny movie. I just don't think it's as funny as everyone's saying it is. And like I was just saying, like I got the joke, and then like they were still like, it's like it was like, okay, am I supposed to still be laughing? Like, can mm-hmm. we move on? I don't know. I was just, I almost also like, I like Frankenstein movie. I like the original Frankenstein movie. I watched two new movies, both Frankenstein, Young Frankenstein, and I liked Frankenstein the movie. And I don't know, I liked it a lot better than Young Frankenstein. I thought this was like one of those movies that it's like a typical making fun of a movie, like almost. Like yeah. That's all it is. It's just making fun of Young Frankenstein.
And Sean and Jared.
And all these other movies.
Eddie and I don't want to step on your toes. We said our piece, and I would love to hear you guys continue to laugh about the parts that made you laugh. I'm simply saying.
There's just
oh,
no
Sean, don't do this.
Score it
oh,
and move
Sean,
on.
Don't you do this. Oh, Jesus
I'm
Christ, Sean.
There's nothing.
You have shit on
no,
so many
I mean,
movies,
Brandon,
buddy.
The point of a the point of a podcast is to have a give and take, and I find positive in every movie. Okay. I've never said there's no redeem, except for Parasite, where I spoke
right,
at
you're
length.
Right. Jeremiah, we should have stopped
like
Parasite after about four minutes of recording.
I've never not found any redeemable anything of the movie that was at all funny, which is what you said on this podcast 3.5 minutes ago.
I don't think anything's funny. But let's go ahead and talk about things that I thought were well done.
Ask us.
Yeah, what you to tell us what you didn't like.
Tell us why we don't
like
it.
You told me there was no redeemable aspect of the movie. That's what you said. No redeemable aspect.
I liked the set. I liked the actors.
That's good. And maybe I was too hard, Sean.
Not saying you.
The score.
I know. Well,
no, I mean, if we're just going to sit here and rip this apart, I'm telling you right now, this is going to.
No, we're not doing that.
Well, first of all, that's what you've done for 34 minutes.
It's someone's point of view of a movie. Yeah,
that's literally
just like you had your own point of view.
The whole purpose
about
having a point of view. And having a point of view and being silent and trashing it are two very different things.
I sat through
Vanilla Sky, which was the tragedy of a movie. And I at least found some interesting parts of that bullshit.
Well, I remember us. I mean, if we're going to go right here, Sean, I remember all of us sitting through you fucking just ripping apart Parasite. And that was a fucking long deal. But you know what we did? We let you say your fucking piece.
What else are we going to do? I'm not just going to laugh at a movie with
what
you.
What other parts of the movie do you want to talk about?
I'm fine. I want to talk about it. I said my part. I'm done. I'm going to talk about it. You know what? Maybe I overjumped the gun and said there's no redeeming quality. Sure. But what I can say is there are very few things I liked about it. But guess what? There are things that I enjoyed. There are things that I think were well done. I would love to talk about Terry Garr. I think that she did a fucking great job. I don't like Madeline Kahn. I just don't think that she's very funny. But guess what? I thought she had some really good parts here. What we can talk about is maybe how there are a lot of great parts. Yeah, we didn't even talk about Peter Boyle. We haven't talked about how it relates to the original and how well it's done with that. One of the scenes with the little girl who gets shot up in the sky with the seesaw. So guess what?
And all of this is wonderful, Brandon, but it kind of gets shot in the foot when you say there's no redeeming quality about the movie.
He's allowed to say
that. In the first 15 minutes of the podcast.
He can say that.
Everybody loves the fact that Eddie and I blew up at each other about Halloween. It's the same fucking thing. He loved it. I hated it.
I get hate mail towards me because I don't give zeros to movies that everyone else wants to give zero. Am I trash? Oh, I don't give a shit.
Keep talking. That's fine. Keep going. That's fine.
Well, I do think this movie is timeless. It does have a timeless feel. And I think because it's black and white, and I'm so happy that they didn't do it in color because, I don't know, I think it was really fucking cool, especially being in a 70s film and going that route. Because it looks fucking great in a black and white film.
It does.
I fucking love the fact that they decided to do like a lot of cool things. And I like the fact that they used the original set from Frankenstein because it looks fucking cool. The special effects in this movie
I didn't know that. I didn't know there was an original set.
Yeah, the production crew literally found that.
No, I was going to say the opening credits to me gave a really just that 30s vibe. I feel like, you know what, there's lots of this movie that we can applaud. And I think that on a technical level, yeah, it's great. You know, I think that one of the things that makes the 1930s, the B Hammer movies or horror movies kind of so classic is they just evoked a vibe, right? And it was this, you know, is that B level movie. It's they were still figuring out film. It's the 1930s. We're only 30 years into really understanding how and what we can do with film. And here you have a movie made 40 years later that recreates it in just a really, really well done way. And I think that we can definitely appreciate that. And I mean, Eddie, you were mentioning, let's talk about Peter Boyle. I think that Peter Boyle is an unspoken hero.
I had no idea. It's like, oh, this guy's been, he was a gem in this movie. Like, I really enjoyed it. I laughed every time he played the monster perfectly, because I was laughing at him just by saying nothing. And then, like, that made me laugh. And then it's just like, he played the monster really well. And as soon as he got, I think they switched the brains around, and he all of a sudden he's this really smart monster. And with his reading glasses, I mean, I've always been the Peter fan from Everybody Loves Raymond. So I really was happy when I saw him in this movie. So I was not expecting it.
Yeah, I love you. Some While You Were Sleeping. That's my Peter Boyle. I love that movie.
Was he in that movie? Was he in that movie?
While You're Sleeping.
Yeah, While You're Sleeping. It was a dad.
Oh my gosh.
So in 1974, Aerosmith took a break from a long night of recording to see the film, and Steven Tyler wrote the band's hit Walk This Way being inspired by Marty Feldman.
That's pretty fucking awesome.
First scene, Walk This Way, when he hands Frankenstein them.
That's awesome. No, like, you know what? I want to talk. Can we talk about Marty Feldman? Because, I mean, as somebody who has a unique physical appearance in real life, you know, I did some digging around and just, like, you know, looking into his bio and just kind of seeing who he was, because, you know, I only know him from Igor in this movie. I mean, the guy, he embraced what he looked like. And you know, I think if we're going to talk about somebody who just did a great job of embracing who he was without any kind of apologies, it's Marty fucking Feldman. And what he does in this movie is, I would say, between him and Terry Garr, they carry this movie. I know that we can applaud Gene Wilder up and down. Absolutely. To me, Gene Wilder gave a little bit, not my favorite performance of his career, but I feel like Terry Garr and Gene and Marty Feldman just fucking handled this. Every scene that they were in, I was drawn to their characters.
I actually think Marty Feldman is so funny. In fact, true story, I believe I read this online, is that hump situation, that was because he was fucking around with the production crew. So every time, he just literally did it by himself. Yeah. So he would just, like, do a scene, and then people would go, like, dude, why is this humping the other way? So they looked at that and they're like, oh, dude, we should just use that into the film. Because he was, like, fucking with the crew and production crew, like, fuck, why does he have his fucking hump on the different side
awesome.
So I think that's really funny.
That's awesome.
It made me the first time they said that, it made me, you know, I think Gene Wilder said it, Frankenstein, and he's like, wait, wasn't that another? And, like, I had to, like, go back, because it's like, it was another fucking site. I thought I was tripping myself. I was like, what the hell? I thought I was, like, just like, what? Are they just, like, accidentally doing this? And, like, he said it, and it made me laugh. I was like, okay, I saw that shit. I was unsure.
And, you know, one of the things that I think, whether you like a movie or not, I feel like you can appreciate it. And this is a movie that despite what I think some people might think, I don't like this movie. I don't. I won't willingly watch it again, but I can appreciate a hell of a lot, you know. And some of the wordplay, and I know, Sean, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it, because I know that you love wordplay like nobody's business. And this movie is just, it embraces wordplay like nobody, no other movie that I can think of. And I know that the one that everybody goes to is what's their name? It was Abby Normal. And I just feel like, you know, it's an overdone joke at this point, but man, when you look at back in 1974, when that was the first time everybody heard it, I mean, that's a classic joke right there. And so, yeah, the wordplay here is amazing, from the Frankenstein to the Abby Normal.
He puts his hand,
right?
He goes into the he goes inside the door, right? And there's, like, a fucking mellow drop or some of that. And he puts his hand here, like, under here. And he's like this. And he freaks out. And he sees his hand. He's like,
He forgot his hand is in there. And he came through the door. And he's like, ah. Yeah.
My favorite part is when he sees Elizabeth, Madeline Kahn, who comes out of the car. And he goes just, like, he's, like, trying to, like, hit on her and shit like that. But then he goes, and when Frankenstein, when the Gene Wilder comes out, he's like, act natural, act like nothing's ever happening and shit like that. Like, he's all trying to play it off and shit, dude.
That's just fine, bro. I don't know. There's nothing better than Gene Wilder in this movie. I'm sorry. The descent into the actual character of Frankenstein is fabulous because he's trying so hard to be straight and perfect and not fall into the traps of his old family. And he gets to Castle Frankenstein, and the first thing he asks is, where is the other library? Where is the private library? Because he knows that there's special books. He knows that there's the underground area. Mm-hmm. And when they're following the violin music and they find that the door that goes to the revolving wall panel, and he goes, but don't do anything. Put the candle back. And then they keep going back and forth, and they do it 3 or 4 times. It reminds me of the same scene in Indiana Jones where it keeps going back and forth. And
oh, Temple of Doom?
Last Crusade. Where he and Sean Connery are sitting in back-to-back and then when he gets down there, they somebody's been there because there's a cigar.
No.
And it's like, who the fuck is smoking a cigar? And it's Cloris Leachman. Cloris Leachman's smoking a cigar.
But Marty Feldman goes to the violin and touches it.
It's warm.
It's warm. You know, like it's a fucking person.
You know, he's so fucking silly. Gene Hackman, I like Gene Hackman's cameo appearance. So I know, Brandon, you were talking about that. Oh, no. And I was surprised. It's like, Gene Hackman too? What the hell?
Yeah. What's interesting about this movie.
That was a shock.
It's young Frankenstein, but if you look at kind of the classic 30s, it's a lot of it's from, Frankenstein, which we did last year, and you should go back and listen to that, listeners. But it's also from Bride of Frankenstein. A lot of the portions are from Bride of Frankenstein. So in Frankenstein, Mary Shelley's book, Frankenstein, the old man character, that scene is pretty prominent. It's really important in the kind of the big picture of the book. And if you remember back in the 1933 Frankenstein, that character's not in there, right? You got the old man who's a blind old man. He's not in the Frankenstein book. I'm sorry, not in the Frankenstein movie. And I remember when I watched Frankenstein, the movie, years and years ago for the first time, I was so disappointed because the old man scene wasn't in it. And that's such an important pivotal scene in the book. And then you get that in Bride of Frankenstein. And what I think that we can definitely applaud, and Sean, you said this earlier, is that it's not just making fun of Frankenstein. It's not just parodying Frankenstein. It's parodying all of those Hammer B movie, monster movies back in the Universal age, right? And I think that you said it, Gene Hackman, of any character or of any actor to come in and do a cameo back in the 70s. I mean, that was like his heyday
for free.
Yeah.
For
free. Right. I mean, he played it so well. I don't care if it was only 4 minutes to see Gene Hackman in there and just saying shit. Let's just have fun with this. I think it's great. Well, one thing I always think of when I see movies like this is I wish that I could be a fly on the wall in the writing room. Right. And just hearing these people just throwing out jokes like, what if we did this? And what if they did this? And what if he gets scared of his hand? And what if, and I think of this with, all Mel Brooks movies and all, The Airplane and.
I don't think you have a writer's room like that, though. I think what you have is actors who take it on themselves to do the stupid shit. Like Marty Feldman, there's the scene where he's coming. Madeline Kahn has finally arrived at the castle. And if you notice, he attacks her fox scarf. She's got a scarf that's a fox, and it's one side is a tail and one side is the head, and he bites the fox and like attacks the fox at one point. It's like, at what point do you make that acting choice? Like
Malin Khan barks at him and fucking hits him in the head. But before that scene, she goes up to the assistant and goes, how do you do? She looks back at Marty Feldman, and then she looks back at Ingrid again, and she goes, how do you do? And then she goes, what do you do?
What do you do in the lab? And it's like that. It's that wordplay. It's that. Yeah. It's that little clever like double entendre. And then Terry Garr has that terrible German accent, which I think is. I mean, it's purposefully awful. When she talks like this, it was after Cher's hairdresser is where she got the accent. When they asked her, do you do a German accent? Because originally, Terry Garr was not in the movie. It was Madeline Kahn was cast in Terry Garr's role. And Madeline Kahn was supposed to be like the love interest and you know, a little bit more engaged.
It's funny you say that, Sean, because I, before we I put the movie in to watch, I had thought that Madeline Kahn was the lab helper love interest. I forgot that she was the Elizabeth character, that she wasn't. And I think it's because I'm remembering her character from Blazing Saddles, right? And Jeremiah, correct me, she's German in that one, right? Isn't she?
Isn't, I don't Madeline know if she's German.
She's got this bad accent.
She's
like a showgirl. And I thought it was like something von Stoop. Was that this movie? I can't even remember. But anyway, I thought it was Madeline Kahn. And so
Baron von Stoop. No, that's not. Yeah.
No, but when I saw Terry Garr, I don't know why, but I was just like fascinated with Terry Garr's character, because to me, she just brought kind of that innocence that I think really was a nice balance to the Frederick Frankenstein character.
It's kind of sad that she's the only one that's alive still out of this movie.
Yeah.
Terry Garr.
She's the only one that's alive. Yeah. Everyone in this cast is gone. It's sad.
I think it's funny that they were pushing Mel Brooks to do this movie in color, and the person who gave him the go-ahead at Fox was Alan Ladd Jr.
Hell
the
yeah.
same fucking guy who went to
went George to Lucas Baffert,
Star Wars. Wars and was like, yeah, do what you want. Like, we're fine. Let's go. Like, I mean, this is a guy. And it was so funny because George Lucas was on the TV the other day talking about the writer's strike. And he was talking about how studios don't know how to make movies. Studios don't know how to focus test and how to produce something that's going to be, quote unquote, quasi enjoyable for the audience. But the true art is in the people who are making the movie. Mm-hmm. The studio system would never have produced something magnificent like Star Wars. Lucas had to do it on his own. Godfather is another perfect one where they fought to get that made the way that they wanted to get it made. This movie in particular, Mel Brooks had a little clout. So when he went to different studios to, obviously it's a lot cheaper movie, he could do the type of movie that he wants to do. And to me, when you look at our podcast and the reason we're here, this movie is the reason we have so many great comedies and so many great, so many great performances from all these different actors, because they were allowed to sit on set and play for hours on end and do voices and do characters.
It makes it even more, applaudworthy or praiseworthy when you look at somebody like Ladd saying, kind of giving the green light and giving space, right, to step back and say, Brooks, you do whatever you got to do, because this was very much the era of film, and film is definitely not cheap in the 70s. Nowadays I could see, it's just digital, so run the digital cameras, take the extra time that you need, but for somebody to give that extra allowance of space and time in an age where film was being used and film was being consumed with each and every day of filming, I think that it just kind of, it's something that we don't really understand now with filmmaking, that, making movies is not a cheap deal. And for you to have a producer that does sit back and say, I trust you. That speaks volumes for somebody like Mel Brooks.
You're talking about you wish you were like a fly on the wall, like in, certain scenes and everything. I guarantee you, this movie was 95% ad lib, because everyone was just kind of going back and forth and back and forth. That scene with Gene Hackman, which I think is so funny, he literally at that last line, I was going to make an espresso, and the people, and supposedly literally that was the only shot they can do, because the whole crew just fucking laughed their asses off and shit. I mean, to me, it's just I think it's cool to see a project and see a movie, and that everyone in that fucking movie is having the best time and shit like that. And I think that comes off the screen when you're just okay, it may not be the craziest funny movie. It may not show balls on the drum set or something like that, like Step Brothers, or just have these crazy scenes. But when you're watching these all time greats just talking to each other and just ad-libbing and just going with the flow. And yeah, I did. It does, in a lot of ways, it's funny you say that, it does feel like a old Saturday Night Live skit, But, you and I, we all kind of agree, that was some of the best funny shit back in the day with Saturday Night Live, when they didn't care about what they were going to fucking say. They went with it. They didn't think twice about it, everything like that. It was almost kind of fearless in a way. That's what I'm trying to say.
Mel Brooks had to pull people off set and pull actors out if they were not in the scene. He asked them to leave because people would, like, I think to Eddie's point earlier, he said, you know, they were waiting for the laugh. I think that the laugh was there and they were trying to cut it out because people were cracking up at and ruining every take that was in this movie. Every time anybody would open their mouth, people were fucking snickering. Mel Brooks had to, you know, had to literally go in a different room to look at a monitor because he kept laughing at the way Gene Wilder would do a scene or do this or do that. He had to go look at, he's like, I can't be here. I can't, I'm just laughing at ruined takes.
Yeah. It seems like there's a lot of chemistry with the whole cast. Mm-hmm. Like I get the vibes of like things that they were doing holds to like shows like The Office, mm-hmm. with like, you know, they were pushing the limits at this Mel Brooks and this movie. So just it's like things that just like makes you like laugh, and it's like, okay, like everyone's laughing the whole time. You know people are laughing. And that's good to see with like it's fun to see that.
Yeah, one of my favorite things ever is to watch live concerts or live video of bands, you know, playing live, obviously. And to just watch them enjoy what they're doing, right? There's nothing more fun for me as an outsider to just watch somebody enjoying their art and enjoying their skill and enjoying their practice and doing it with the people that they care about and the people that are good around them. And I feel like that's what you get with ensemble films, right? And it doesn't matter if, you know, obviously dramas are much more serious. So you like to watch those ensemble comedies. And that's one of the things I love about a show like Arrested Development is that you've got all these other people, all these people together who are brilliant and funny on their own. And they just have so much fun together. And I you're right. I get that feeling of this movie, but I get that feeling in every Mel Brooks movie. So I'm saying, Mel Brooks,
yeah,
if you could ever hear this, I think that what you do is you create a vibe on your set that just translates across the pixels and across the film to the viewers. And I think that it's clear. It's obvious what vibe he creates and how we can benefit from it.
I think one of the worst parts of this movie is Inspector Yes. Kemp or Clint, whatever. He just, I understand what they were going for. So it reminded me
of
the Peter Sellers movie.
Dr. Strangelove. Yeah.
And that's where I feel like they were. I don't know which one came first. I think it was probably Dr. Strangelove. And yeah. I feel like this was like a ripoff or like a parody of that character. Yeah,
that's in my notes.
I felt like this portrayal was unnecessary, weak, and detracted from the story. Yeah. I thought that whole section could have been removed and you wouldn't have even noticed it. He really didn't have any part in the movie, because when Frankenstein on his own recovered the monster with the violin, then the inspector comes in and basically says, let's go have wine and cheese. That whole part was, to me, just his whole character was unnecessary. Right. And I'm wondering if there was something there that was cut or that we're missing, like, or
yeah,
that,
yeah,
it seems like, because he felt out of place and not real funny. Yeah.
But I think that's kind of like the joke of it, where it's just like, you know, a riot or something like that. It's sometimes it's so fucking useless that in the end it just loses its fucking steam and they don't even know what to fucking do afterwards. Like,
yeah,
okay, well, what do we do? Okay, let's just go somewhere else. And I think that was probably making a joke about shit like that.
But no, Jeremiah, that kind of goes along with what I love about Mel Brooks movies. And I love what you're saying about that, is that what I love is he doesn't say this is going to be a good joke, this is going to be a bad joke. He just throws it all at the screen and says, laugh if you want and don't laugh if you don't want. It's funny you say that, Sean, because I had Dr. Strangelove. I mean, literally, that's what I wrote in my notes. That's all I could think about, is like, this is a rehashing of Peter Sellers, but Peter Sellers did it better with the Nazi arm. And this one, when he lights the cigar, is the only time where I thought that that was funny, right? That was it. Yeah, nothing was else, good. You know, the mechanical sound, it wasn't funny. And then I agree, Sean, that, you know, when he speaks in the accent that gets so thick that nobody says, and then he has to repeat it again. To me, that's like a classic Mel Brooks joke.
He repeated stuff.
Like, doesn't that feel like just something that Mel Brooks does?
It does. It just, for me, it just got old fast. That part of the movie got old fast. One of my favorite things, though, was the soliloquy that the I don't know if that's the right word. That the monster gives at the very end. For as long as I can remember, people have hated me. They look at my face and my body, and they run away in horror. In my loneliness, I decided that if I could not inspire love, which is my deepest hope, I would instead cause fear. Like, that legitimately is, to me, is like the monster self-reflecting on Mary Shelley's Frankenstein as the character of Dr. Frankenstein. I don't know.
Huge
there's
meta
something
moment.
There that like,
yeah.
and it's Peter Boyle, and he's trying to sound like Gene Wilder, but at the same time be his own character. And it was just, to me, it was beautiful. It was a beautiful scene, a beautiful moment in this movie.
Is he a big guy, like a tall guy real life?
No, he's not.
So he's not
he
a tall guy.
He was wearing 8-inch shoes.
So when I saw that,
wearing literally
I was just like, this guy's not this tall.
I was about to say, because I've seen him that Raymond show. I'm like, well, maybe he shrunk or something, because I don't remember him being that fucking tall.
Oh, man.
We haven't really talked about putting on the Ritz either. And for me, this is where I thought the movie always ended. I thought this was the last scene of the movie for years and years and years. It all culminated with putting on the Ritz. And this is I'm not sure why Gene Wilder was so adamant that this be in the movie. I really don't understand why. He must have had some reason, but at points it's hilarious and it's funny and it's charming, and at points it's out of place and awkward and different. And at the end of the day, it would never get past today. Mm-mm. But you're watching it, and if you actually watch the technical performances, they're really, really good. Like the wand work and the choreography, it's funny, and the monster is just a bit slow. Yeah. And I don't know. It missed for me
also, but this also misses in the same way that in Blazing Saddles, a movie that I do appreciate, with the exception of, you know, one or two scenes, and one of those being the very, very end when they do the break out of the fourth wall literally and wind up in this, you know, 1940s musical dance musical. It's I think in a lot of ways it's paying homage to Mel Brooks and his love of the stage and his love of old Hollywood and showy Hollywood, and this idea of putting on a show rather than just making a movie. I always think of that. I don't think it lands in either movie, but I think it's kind of giving a hug to Mel Brooks, saying, you know, this is why I got into this, is to show somebody something that is extraordinary, that is not normal in real life.
And it does harken back to the old King Kong, you know, Fay Wray.
That's what that is. Yeah. God,
that's
dang
what
it
is.
Dude. I was
everything
trying to
was
figure
a,
that one
yeah,
out.
Everything was a presentation. Everything was so, you know, it was like the Prestige. The gather people together and let them see this magical mystery thing. And so I think that's part of what he was trying to go for. And then to make fun of it with something like putting on the Ritz was just, I mean, it just didn't hit for me.
Which
it
of all songs. Not, but it's become classic.
I have to admit, it's classic, but it's my least favorite part of the movie. That's just me. I always, since I was a little kid, like, you know, like, where's the fast forward part? You know, where's the controller so I can fast forward the part? You know, that's just how it was, because I just wanted to see more like Marty Feldman and Madeline Kahn and shit. You know, like, those are the people in this movies where I just, like, I can eat them up all day because I love them so much.
Well, and they bounced off each other so beautifully. I mean, Marty Feldman, I always confused him with Peter Falk. Mm. And in one of my favorite movies of all time, which we'll never do on the podcast, is The Great Race. And Peter Falk and Marty Feldman are very similar. Kind of small characters that play henchmen, not henchmen, but like assistants. And they have like these great one-liners and these great like little just jabs. And I think that, I don't know, these characters shine through the movie so well. It's hard to express.
That brings us to the end of review. Now it's time in the podcast where each of the hosts provides a score on the following scale. Frankenstein.
That's Dr.
By the scale, please.
That's Dr. Frankenstein, please.
Frobrick.
Yes. 0, the perfect movie. You don't need shit to enjoy it. 1, a feel-good first cocktail. 2, a happy buzz. 3, you're going to Uber or Lyft home. 4, rough morning walk of shame. 5, blackout, shit-faced, spring break drunk. Gentlemen, let's start with Jeremiah.
Yeah, for me, hands down, this is probably one of the funniest movies of all time, for me personally, because I think it has a lot of wit. It's so much fun. It's dangerous. I just love the vibe in this movie here, man. I love the style, and I think it's because I love the cast more than anything. I just like them just going back and forth and back and forth. To me, this is like one of the funniest casts, and it's just so beautiful to see them in work and just like do this dance in a way, you know, where they're just like, you know, one is taking the lead and another person takes the lead and everything. And I love shit like that, you know. I love that with all my heart, you know. I think the first half of the movie is better than the second half of the movie. I think once the whole coming into life for the monster, I think that it hits its peak right here, and then it kind of falls down a little bit. But then the end of the movie with when Melanie Khan comes around, is she just fucking, she's like the closer of the movie, man. She's like, you know, badass in this movie. And so for me, it's not a perfect movie, but you know what, man, I can watch this movie anytime, especially every Halloween season that comes around. It's going to be like on the playlist and I'm going to watch this, man. So for me, man, this is a 0.85 for me. I can watch this movie so many times.
Just under a feel-good first cocktail.
Just under a feel-good first cocktail. I really love this movie.
A little extra.
0.85.
Eddie, go for it.
Yes. So, you know, I said what I said earlier and you guys brought me down a little bit from the score I was originally give it. Young Frankenstein is beautiful. It's a beautifully created movie. And I give that a lot of props. I love how they set pieces from the original Frankenstein movie. It does, have pretty funny, a lot of, you know, pretty good funny scenes at times that, that are enjoyable. And I smiled, I laughed. And then there's also some times where I got up from and, you know, had to make myself a drink because I was like, okay, where's this going? Up and down a couple times for me. I wanted to see maybe more, I don't know, more effective comedy for myself. But Gene Wilder's performance and the rest of the performances from the actors, you could tell that they enjoyed it with each other. They were near perfect with each other. I don't think anyone could have been substituted for this cast. It's a still well done film. But for me, I'm giving this one a little bit lower than Jeremiah. I think I'm just on the opposite of it. It's my first time watching it. And maybe it's one of those movies that I need to, it needs to grow on me because it's my first time watching it. And there's so much that was maybe going on that just didn't hit at first. So, but for me, I'm going to give this, a 3.25. You're going to Uber Lifting home, with, half a shot. So I'm a 3.25.
Okay.
Brandon.
So this is one of the best things about art is that we all have different styles. We all have different tastes. We all have different things that we appreciate and we like. If this podcast and the scores that we give are based solely off of our enjoyment of the film, then yeah, this movie would be a hell of a lot of drinks and I'd be getting drunk off my ass. I don't connect with it like I do other Mel Brooks movies. I just don't connect with it like I do other comedies or just other films. But one of the things that we need to remember, that I need to remember and that I reminded myself over the last whatever long it's been today, is that the basis of our scores is not just enjoyment, but it's also on relevance and cultural importance. And listen, I'm the first one to admit I don't get this movie. I don't get the humor of it. I don't get the popularity of it, but that doesn't mean that it's a bad movie. It doesn't mean that people who like this movie are wrong. And it doesn't mean that I'm necessarily wrong for disliking the movie. You guys are right. The Rotten Tomatoes says a hell of a lot. And when we have two scores, right, critics and audience, that are so fucking high, I will be the first to admit I'm just missing something. Now, this is a movie that I've given several times of trying. I've seen this movie, I don't know, probably 3 or 4 times in my life, realistically. I just don't laugh at it. But that doesn't mean that I don't appreciate Mel Brooks or Gene Wilder or any of the characters, writers, or actors and creators of this film. I think that this is a movie that, Jeremiah, you said it earlier, this is a movie that gave us other movies that I do like. Things like Airplane, things like Robin Hood, Men in Tights, things like those movies that to me are a little bit more polished and a little bit more just well put together. I think that we have to commend this movie for what it does, from the cinematic graphic level that it puts into the each shot, to the humor that it attempts and hits with sometimes and doesn't hit with other times. Eddie was right. I just didn't get it. I just didn't connect with it. I appreciate the hell out of people who do like it. So Sean and Jeremiah, I love the fact that you like it. I could have sat back happily and listened to you guys riff and remind each other of the different parts of the movie that you liked, because that to me is just as enjoyable as watching a movie that I actually did enjoy. I think that this, as I mentioned before, this has a lot of cultural relevance. It is one of the most quoted and referenced films out there. So if we're talking about just its importance in film, this one has brought my score down from what, you know, I would want to give it if it was just my opinion of the film end of story. And I'm going to go ahead and, you know what, Eddie, I like what you're saying. I'm going to give it a little bit lower because it just didn't connect with me, but I'm going to go with a 3.4 for me. I'm going to go with 3.4. I love that people love this movie. It makes me happy because that's what art is. Art should bring in visceral reactions one way or the other. And if you like it, fucking fantastic. And if you don't like it, also fucking fantastic. So 3.4 for me.
Still get a couple laughs out of it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you have some fun talking about it is what you do. And I do appreciate you guys helping to bring some of those moments to me. So, Sean, I want to hear what you have to say with
me too.
Score.
Well, that's what I kind of was getting at with you know, kind of earlier in the podcast, is that I don't care that you didn't like it. I don't care that you hated it. I don't care that you didn't get it. I don't care that you didn't think it was funny. I don't get modern comedy. I think a lot of it's trash. People seem to love it. I have no problem talking about it till the ends of the earth. We have to be able to have a conversation about it. We have to explore what is positive about it. Fast and the Furious 9 has positive aspects of it. I'm never going to watch that movie, but it's got some positive aspects. And I think that's what we were able to do after we kind of, you know, had our issue today, is we were able to talk about a movie, and we might, you know, we might not have agreed on it. I don't agree with a lot of movies that we pick, you know. I'm a first bitch in a movie, but at least there's something to say, and at least you got to find good quality. You got to find the silver lining in every movie, you know, unless it's irredeemable like Parasite. I'm just kidding.
You're playing a thin line there, Sean.
And if you go back and listen to Parasite, I didn't bash it all the way through. I was very quiet, let you guys talk about it, and then I gave my ending, which was
a disclosure.
And I did. It was. I did. But I waited until the very end to give my bomb.
You watch Young Frankenstein. I don't think you should be cited or given a ticket or arrested. I think that you should enjoy it, and that's all I'm saying with that.
Well, I think everyone should watch this movie. Everyone should watch The Birth of Parody. And Mel Brooks is a very polarizing director, and I will give you that 100%. I think this was his best movie. I think it was the best put together movie. I think that the funniest movie is Spaceballs, but this movie particularly, I thought that it was better than that. I thought the actors were better than that. I think you're looking at the comedic gems of a generation in Gene Wilder and Madeline Kahn. Young Frankenstein, I think, is Mel Brooks's best movie. I think it's his best written, best directed, best polished, best script. It's got a redeeming story. It both make fun of and pays homage to a great moment in American cinematic history in the movie Frankenstein. That being said, I understand that it's not everyone's cup of tea. I understand that Mel Brooks is not everyone's cup of tea. But for me, it's my cup of tea, and I love it. And I'll take two lumps of sugar, and I'll see it again and again and again, and watch it every year. So for me, this movie is a 0.25. I think that it is as close to comedic genius as you can possibly get.
You know, I'll say one thing about these scores. They are divisive. They are divisive. They are extreme. They're polar. I think it might be of the first times that happened. And it's going to be exactly where it should be, Sean.
Exactly.
I'm going to have to go watch Robin Hood Men in Tights now. Because now I just want to see another Mel Brooks.
Oh, I do love me some Men
in Tights. Watch Spaceballs.
Spaceballs
is
especially
funny.
Spaceballs. Okay. It gives us a 1.9375. That's what I got, too. A 1.9375.
Jeremiah, where does that put?
High is where it puts it, in my opinion. But you know what?
I don't know how it does it, but it's literally if it should be exact where it's at. It is tied for 34th, okay, right between two movies, Edward Scissorhands and Fight Club.
Better.
Now, if you guys listen to our podcast, those are two fucking movies that were very cut right in between.
Yep. Yes.
Where's the OG Halloween? Jeremiah.
It just fits.
Halloween.
No, Halloween's way down on the list.
Halloween's 2.25.
Listen, listeners.
Right there.
Wait, talk about listeners. Don't tread, okay, listeners? Because you know what's going to happen? I have a selection that's going to be coming out in a couple weeks, and I guarantee you the Lions would actually fucking regroup again, and they will join with each other, and they will fucking hate my movie, okay? So don't fucking tread on this, okay? Because they're both going to be fucking like killing my fucking movie in a couple weeks.
I know. I can't wait for you to listen. And listeners, just be looking for my next pick, because I can't wait to see Sean probably taking a movie that he actually does like and being like, oh, this is Brandon's pick, so fuck him. Well, here's what I thought was going to happen. Stupidly, I thought, and this is not jabbing fingers at anybody, Sean, is that I thought, you know what? I'm going to be honest. I'm going to give you what I thought so that you can say, ooh, Brandon, you're wrong because. And then I'd be like, you know what? Yeah.
We got to fill 15 minutes. Yes. And it can't be all with, I hated that it was black and white.
Time out. You're the one that started saying, all right, we're done. And it was 28 minutes. I was like, why would you say that? Why would you say that? No, we had a lot to talk about still.
Because you said the movie was irredeemable.
I don't think I said the word irredeemable. And
no,
Jeremy,
you said that it has no redeeming qualities. That's exactly what you said. Yes.
Maybe I did, because I do believe it. I think it doesn't have very many.
Sean, you don't.
I don't like it. It's terrible.
Open up the shoe. You don't do a rip. You don't just say, all right, parachute, let's go.
Can I tell you what? By doing that, we actually got a really good podcast. Yeah. So I'm going to go ahead and stick with it.
Okay. Maybe our best one ever.
I know. Maybe
go ahead and wrap us up, man.
I'm just saying, 3 years ago, we would have broke up. But you know what? We're so professional. We're so mature. We know how to handle this shit. Listen, they're going to eat shit. They're going to kill my fucking film. So, listeners, don't worry. The Lions will fucking get
together. He'll change it four times.
It will be changed.
It'll be fun.
All right. If you enjoyed our review,
I appreciate you.
Fan of the podcast, we ask that you please subscribe. If you're listening, give us a 5-star review on iTunes. You can also find us on Instagram at the Dot Gentleman Podcast. You can reach out to us on by email at hosts at thegentlemanpodcast.com. And we all just want to thank you so much for listening. And very much like this. There's something about Halloween episodes.
That season
there's
ended
something
right
about
after
Halloween
that
episode.
That season ended real early.
But you know what? You know what didn't end, Sean or Eddie? Our friendship.
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't talk to you for 3 months. What are you talking about?
3 months, dude.
You needed a break. You needed a break, bro. All right. With that, thank you all and cheers. And we'll see you next week for another Halloween, our third Halloween entry into our season 4. Cheers.
Cheers, everyone.